Success isn't given, it's earned. And earning it means becoming the person who deserves it. The bottom line is where we cut through the chaos to simplify success, uncovering the strategies, mindset, and resilience it takes to win. Real stories, expert insights, and practical tools. Because the only way to the top is by putting in the work. This is The Bottom Line.
Welcome to The Bottom Line. This show is all about cutting through the chaos to simplify success. And I'm your host, Ryan Herpin. Today, I'm joined by someone who is highly decorated, mountain of accolades, and someone I have seriously looked forward to speaking with, Krishna Mohan, a serial entrepreneur, a speaker, and number one best-selling author, been featured on Fox TV and multiple media outlets with over 27 years of leadership experience across industries like manufacturing, IT, energy, telecom. Krishna has worked with Fortune 500 companies and startups alike, helping them scale, expand internationally, and generate millions in revenue. Krishna, thank you so much for being here today. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm excited as well.
Absolutely. So I like to really dive into things. As the name of the show would suggest, the bottom line, I like to get there in a very efficient, effective way. And the first thing we're really going to be talking about today is mergers and acquisitions. And really, if we have to look at this, for many leaders, the thought of merger, you know, selling or buying feels risky and extremely overwhelming. And I really want your help to break this down. So if I look at the problem, right, you know, facing a lot of the audience that this topic really applies to, that maybe they're considering a merger or a buyout, it often feels way too risky and extremely confusing. And I've had my fair share of experiences with businesses that have the objective to sell or to, you know, to go through a merger, right? And Krishna, I'm glad to have you on the show to help us break this down, to help the audience truly understand what this means and why it's not so scary. So sure. I'm gonna dive right in. Okay. And I want to start with something really, really important. So how do you help someone break down this big moment into easy steps that make sense, that are not, you know, it makes it not so scary for them?
Right. So first things first is, what is the exit strategy, right? Like, okay, now that we have grown this company, we are at this certain, you know, certain level of revenues, top line and bottom line. And if I were to look at what is it that it's looking like in the next 3 years to 5 years, and if my exit strategy is to, you know, sell the company at a certain valuation, now what are my options, right? My options are A is I could look for a strategic buyer. You know, each set of buyers look at valuation differently. You know, so for that, what are the things that, you know, I have in place, you know, in terms of my financials, in terms of my operations, my team and everything. So understanding the exit goal is very important. So that once that's narrowed down, now it's a matter of, okay, would that be a merger, or would that be, you know, an actual, you know, exit, or would that be even an acquisition? You know, so these are all the scenarios. That's how we need to look at it, not so much in a reactive way, but then more proactive way. So I'm an $8 million company. My goal is to, you know, probably get to $15 million, but organically, there is only so much I can grow. I can double digit grow or do something, but I cannot exponentially grow. So that is where the options would open. So for someone who is really conservative, who think the business is, okay, my business is valued at 8 million, I'll be happy to walk away if I have a buyer like tomorrow. Okay, so for that, it requires a different set of, you know, buyer. So these are the ways that I kind of keep it simple without complicating, understanding really the motivation, understanding really their goals, understand what they really are trying to accomplish is the number one task. Then we can break it down to, you know, the strategy, and then, you know, go from there.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's impossible to have some kind of strategy, plan, or understanding of what the objective really is if the goal isn't clear and concise. Exactly. You know, to understand what is the real motive, Why are they doing this? Why are they entertaining this? Do they want
Exactly.
an exit to go live their best life elsewhere, doing something else? Or are they wanting maybe a merger to where they can grow exponentially? What
Absolutely.
are those options, right? And I've been through a few myself. The first one I was ever a part of as director of operations for a very large manufacturing company, we were able to vertically integrate with a global giant. The buyout ended up being a 33 times EBITDA sale. So
Yes.
it was a unicorn sale, massive multiplier, and it was because of the strategy. It made us the prime candidate for them to take a part of the market they did not have. And we structured so that integration would be simple,
right?
Right? But the motive is what really matters. For my team at the time, the owners of the business, they wanted to exit. One of the owners, his strategy was as soon as they bought out, he wanted to make sure he wasn't locked into any more, you know, into any of the agreements. He didn't want to be stuck around for a couple of years, even if that meant giving up some of his pay downs and things. He just wanted to throw a ninja smoke bomb and disappear. And that's okay. But
That's okay.
understanding what their goal is, couldn't
Yes.
agree with you more. That's definitely the first step. So with that being said, can you tell us a story about someone who felt afraid to go through a merger or to sell their business, but then found it opened a new whole set of, you know, possibilities?
Right. So my observation over the past many, many years is many of the business owners do not know the options available. They vaguely know, you know, that there is something called, you know, mergers or acquisitions, but they don't know what their options are. So they typically try to, you know, transition the business to someone in the family, or they obviously try to exit, you know, by selling it to their partners, or maybe they're looking at the business next door, right? I'm at tech company, so I naturally try to look for other tech business owner and try to sell it. So that is something that I observed, but in that, you know, in that case, what I try to do is to educate that the possibilities, educate how the valuation works, educate how the EBITDA, you know, is actually going to make a difference, and the multiples, you know, one more multiples or two more multiples can change the game significantly, and how can that be possible? And I show the possibilities, and I most recently I'm actually working with a tech company. They were like thinking small, I'll put it that way. They were not thinking big. But then what I realized is show them the synergies. You know, if you can show the synergistic value what you have built to a larger player, the value of what that can do to that, you know, that larger player and their customers and their customers' customers can mean multi-million dollars. So in this example, without giving names, I can clearly show an extra $25 million in terms of valuation from what was originally expected. And now they're going through this process. The due diligence process is happening as we speak right now. So this is one, and in the past, I helped somebody who is in the franchisee business, and they were like pretty obviously, you know, trying to exit, and they don't know, they were trying to retire. They really don't know how the valuation works. All they see is this is my revenues, this is what we make, and we think this is the value. That's it. There's no basis, and there is no nothing. So then I kind of go through the whole process, the lifetime value of customers versus the average customers, you know, value, and then the retention rates and the, you know, the market dominance. Once we put all these things in place, all of a sudden they realize there's so much value to what they have done, and including the business credit that they have is a significant asset that they're sitting on their balance sheet, which they did not even value. They don't even know that has a value by itself. So, yeah, so the things like that, you know, I think a lot of money is left on the table. It's understandable because they're not really finding someone who has complete knowledge about this whole process. Typically, they try to find the business broker that they know or someone. They're more or less just creating a SIM and listing the business and not really adding a lot of value. you know, because they really do not have the experience in operations, and their job is not to really help them increase the valuation or really create an exit plan. So that's where I think these things are coming up. But I think from our experience, since we are pretty hands-on, we are not only advisors, but we are also in the trenches making deals ourselves. Through this journey, we learned the hard lessons, and that's what we are trying to bring to the table. And I think that's what the clients see as value. In fact, with our approach, we were able to, you know, get some equity positions in some transactions just because of the value we bring in, and they want to be on their side and then help them along the way.
You know, it's funny. There's a few nuggets of gold that you really just dropped that were so important. And one of the things I really have to highlight and I have to echo back is it's all about perspective and the value you can communicate to the potential buyer.
Yes.
Or the potential entity that wants to merge, right?
Yes.
I've seen it go so many ways, and I've had the privilege of working with an M&A advisor and broker, Mr. Cliff Gardner. Man, he is a wizard in the field. And he took the liberty and the time to educate me quite a bit in the makings of what really drives a good sale. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is perspective, as well as the limited and minimizing of risk and integrity of the books.
Yes.
Massive, massive. But I am loving this conversation so far. There's so much meat here, so much value in what you're saying. And the experience is obviously pouring right out of you. So we will be right back on the bottom line. Coming up, we will explore how to find funding with confidence and why the money you need might be closer than you think. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the bottom line. Love what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of The Bottom Line or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. We are back with the amazing Krishna, someone with a mountain of accolades and experience that very much stands well above mine. So it's fun to talk about these really big, crazy concepts and a lot of the stuff that people really struggle with in business. So this segment, we're actually going to be talking about one of the biggest challenges I've run into with my clients, finding funding. For so many, that process feels like you're running into locked doors, roadblocks, speed bumps. It gets really, really scary. So Christian's really here to help us figure out how to approach this with confidence and clarity. So Krishna, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm excited to dive into this with you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thanks for the opportunity again. And I'm equally excited.
So looking at this problem a little bit different, right? You know, a lot of businesses need money to grow, yet funding often feels really inaccessible. And I'm excited for you to help guide our viewers on building that courage to identify opportunities and reframe funding, the whole funding process, as an opportunity rather than an obstacle. So we're going to get right into it and get to the meat of what really matters. So how do you help somebody feel brave when they're really trying to find that funding or that capital, because I know it can be really scary. So how do you help them feel brave?
Yeah, so again, I think it boils down to your compelling value proposition in terms of what problem are you really solving in the market, right? Like how valuable it is, how critical it is, and that determines the whole lot of aspects, like in terms of, you know, scalability and everything else. Once that is very clear, the second thing from there is in terms of what are your real goals? Like, what are you trying to do with this company? Are you really thinking you want to, you know, take it to $5 million in the next 2 years and, you know, maybe $100 million in the next 5 years? Or maybe eventually you want to go public and do some interesting stuff. Or you want to build a company to like $50 million and then, you know, at a $10 million EBITDA, you know, sell at X multiples to a larger private equity group. So you need to have that game plan in place, and you should do a lot of homework, right? If you do a lot of homework, then you will be able to articulate in such a way that it helps others to see through things, and you will come out confidently. And my observation is most founders are like more reactive. They came this far with their personal funds, family funds, and now they want to go to the next level. Now they need money. That's just the immediate next step. That immediate next step could be your $100,000, $200,000, $500,000. That may sound big for you, but that may be very small for an investor. But what investor is looking at is, I'm betting this money and I have options with couple other companies, right? If I'm investing in this, what is going to happen? If I'm investing in that, what is going to happen? And if I can sell my dream and give the investor an opportunity to be part of the dream, then he becomes your partner in your success. And if you present in such a way that what this can do for them, then the money is going to come in. But if you approach in a reactive way, I have this and now I am trying to do this. Now, if you can invest, this is the returns I can get. Then you're always putting yourself in a defensive position. You're always in a position to convince others, which will be always hard. You know, but then if you position yourself in a way where you have a plan and you came this far, and then you're looking for, like smart money, not just money, someone who could not only bring money, but they can also add strategic value. They could open doors. Somebody who has access to private equity groups, somebody who has access to deal makers, somebody who can bring M&A game to your table, apart from money, right? So if you have that plan, then you will strategically identify them. And then if you also can also create a player team around you, the experts and the advisors along with you, to show that you're fully prepared to go for the bigger game, then you attract money. You don't chase money, right? So then that is what I would recommend. It sounds a little unconventional, but that's the right way to do it. On the other side, I think building business credit is imperative for every small business, irrespective of the type of business, because you can build your business credit based on EIN without using your personal FICO and collateral. You can raise a bunch of money. You could easily get to 50K, 500K, or a million or a couple million slowly as the business grows. Then you have vendor credits, state credits, and then you have all this lines of credits available for you that can help you to build your team and spend money in operations while you raise big money. The problem here is most small business owners, they do not have little money to do the right things, and then now they're chasing big money and they don't look good. So you need to look good when you're talking to folks who are at a different level, and then that cycle you're unable to break because you never had this luxury of having a couple hundred thousand dollars sitting on the side to do all the right things that you want to do. So then you're in the cyclical pattern, and then you keep losing time. And by the time you think that you're fully ready, and now it comes to a point of desperation, now you want to either dilute your equity, or someone who is really big will just buy you pennies on a dollar. So this is a sad story that I see, but I think being proactive, taking one step back, being fully prepared, or be aware that investors, venture VCs, or whoever you're trying to approach, they have hundreds of deals sitting on the table on a daily basis, and they're trying to find diamonds in the rough. And how do you stand out? Yeah, not always these ideas are powerful, but that's okay. But as long as you have a plan, as long as you're sure about what you are doing here, and then you show the confidence, okay, I have beta tested the product. Yes, I have a few customers who are willing to sign up. Yes, I have a few POCs in there. I have already sold this product to a few customers. I saw there is some traction. I need to buy inventory. I need to deploy 10 designers. Yes, there is that, they can see through things. And then you can have someone come in, and then help you out. And then you could show something that's valuable for them in the future. It's just not immediate money, right? I put in 10 in 100K and I make 10K. That's not what I'm looking at. I put in 10, 100K, I make $5 million. Yes, I'm interested, but I can wait. There's no problem. But do you have a plan? So we don't come out this way. We come up, most founders and business owners are approaching as a regular format. I come to this level, I prepare my pitch deck, and okay, I pitch. It's almost like a sales call. It's not about push, it's about pull. you don't push anything to anybody. And then just because your pitch deck has reached to, you know, my desk doesn't mean I'm going to even look at it. Because I'm looking at the person who is behind this, and then his vision and his dream. That's all. Everything else is just details.
That's a really good point. You know, it's funny. You reminded me of a quote. I can't remember exactly who it was from, but it goes like, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And anything you do within business to grow, to succeed, to achieve anything, especially funding, is you got to have a good plan. It's all preparation. You have to have a good plan and the passion behind that plan. And that passion is going to sell that plan to who has the funding capabilities. And from there, like you said, you know, smart. You've got to find smart money. That to me has more weight than anything, because not only could that funding provide, yes, capital, but that funding opportunity can provide strategic insight, absolutely, connections, network that you don't have access to. So there's so much value in what you said. And honestly, I wish I was taking notes. I'm gonna have to watch this back and make sure I take some notes on that, because there's some very critical pieces that are easily missed. But with such a powerful talk like this, you know, there's so much value that's been wrapped up. Where can our audience find you? How can they connect with you? How can they reach out, have a conversation, and learn from you directly?
I think best way is they can book a confidential discovery call by reaching out to my email, krishna@geniusvisionaryinc.com. Again, krishna@geniusvisionaryinc.com, and they can refer to the show, and I'll be able to accommodate them on my calendar, and then we can go from there.
Well, Krishna, thank you so, so much for joining us today. This has been such a pleasure. You've talked about a lot of different, very powerful things, and we covered two big topics that a lot of businesses fear. There's a lot of struggle and scarcity and just a lack of understanding, for a better way to put it, and what really surrounds this. Now, when it comes to mergers, acquisitions, there's a lot that goes into it. It's all, a lot of it's perspective and then minimizing risk. We've talked about funding, and a lot of that also boils down to, like we said, having a good plan and the passion, not only to share that plan, share that vision, but execute it when the funding is available.
Yes.
No one wants to invest in something that's not going to have a return. Doesn't make sense. So if you don't have a good plan, no one's going to want to take the risk. So we have to minimize that risk. But Krishna, you know, you've explored how to face those mergers and acquisitions without fear, and that's so vital, and how to find the funding with confidence, major part of that. And both are game changers for anyone looking to grow and succeed in business. So for our viewers, remember, success isn't about avoiding risk. It's about making informed, confident choices that move you forward. So until next time, stay focused, stay driven, make a good plan, and back it up with passion. This next segment we've got coming up, we have another guest with a bunch of vital, powerful information. So don't go anywhere. Stretch out, grab coffee, popcorn, whatever it is you've got to do. Get prepared, because we have a lot more here on The Bottom Line. We are back on The Bottom Line. In this show, we cut through the chaos to simplify success. Again, I'm your host, Ryan Herpin, and today we're introducing a new guest. And we're bringing him in to talk about a topic that affects every business and every employee: benefits. Joining me is Bob Ninneber, and man, this guy has so many accolades, achievements, that it makes me feel pretty small. But I'm so excited to talk to such an expert on these topics today. You know, it's crazy. You know, he's CHFC, RICP, CLU, a financial expert, co-founder of Benefit RFP, and 2022 Humanitarian Award winner, which is bizarre to me. Bob advises boards on executive benefits and senior financial programs, and he has led the development of award-winning technology and services for executive plans. He's also an accomplished author, with two of his books currently in production for film. Bob, thank you for being here. It's such a pleasure to have you on. I'm excited to dive into this with you.
Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. So I kind of want to look at this in a different way, right? Employees and business leaders alike often feel overwhelmed by benefits. Plans can be really confusing, hard to understand, and even hard to explain. You know, so I really want to start by breaking down why benefits feel so complicated and how companies can make them more accessible and valuable for their teams. So a problem, right? Problem that faces a lot of businesses. And a lot of the audience that watches this show is that it is complicated. And employees often do not understand what they're signing up for. This whole segment is meant for us to explore the practical strategies to simplify those benefits, improve the communication, and boost employee understanding and satisfaction. So as the show would suggest, I like to get to the bottom line of everything. So I want to dive into the meat, pick that beautiful brain of yours, and see how we can add value to our audience. So first and foremost, why are benefit plans written in a way that's so confusing for everyday employees?
Well, you know, it's a great question because there is a lot of confusion out there. We did a conversation just with the Fortune 1000 companies a couple of years ago, and 97% of the people that their sole job is to work on executive benefits, cash benefits, stock benefits, whatnot for their top people. And 97% of them said that they were less than 50% knowledgeable because of all the rules, the regs, the challenges, the hurdles, everything you go over that make it complex. So what we did years ago is we built out a simple solution. We took all of the confusion and put it kind of in the back end or the inside of our proprietary technology, so that instead of people having to worry about the rules and regs that, you know, are sometimes gotchas in this world, those are eliminated. So now we just come to the point of using one of our technologies where a client can go on with their company and really do a full plan design of what they want to achieve. And the great thing about executive benefits is it's really a white paper. You can design it however you want it. There are actually very wide open rules around these that allow companies to set up plans to allow their participants to defer up to 100% of their income, 100% of their salary or commissions or bonus dollars. They can defer their stock. All these things enable participants to do a couple of things. One, during their growth years, if they're making a lot of money and they don't need it all today and they don't want to pay taxes, they can defer those dollars. And they can even take those dollars out in other states. I'm in California. We're one of the most tax aggressive states in the country. And rather than paying those taxes at distribution, if a participant wants to move to another state of lesser tax or no personal tax, they can do that and take those distributions out, which saves them, $133,000 per million on the distribution. And these are all rules that have existed for decades within the IRS, the Department of Labor regs, and ERISA. And so taking those complexities out of the conversation makes it a lot more fun. And that's what it should be. When you're talking about money, it should be a fun conversation, not a difficult conversation. The other thing that a lot of companies hear when they first are kind of going around the idea of doing something to put an executive plan in place to help recruit, retain, and reward their top people to make sure they don't leave and they don't have to replace them and do all those things. It gives them the opportunity to really focus on what they want their plans to do, the goals, how long they want vesting schedules to be, those types of things. But also it eliminates, they learn real quick that building the right plan, using the tax rules that exist out there, any plan in America that's an executive benefit plan, when it's properly set up and funded, will actually build a profit for the organization. And I'll say that again, because a lot of people are always really surprised that, wait a minute, I thought this was going to increase my cost to pay an executive. No, it reduces negative cash flow related to paying out those executives, while at the same time building a piggy bank, if you will, a complete asset for the company that can be shared with shareholders. If it's a privately held company, then the owners of the company themselves can use the profits however they want. They can put it back into the company, or they can utilize it for their own benefits. They can put together cash enhancements or cash maximization plans for themselves. And when they see that and they understand that, when participating companies understand that, now you have a really, truly, I hate to use the term because it's so overused, win-win situation, where owners and participants are achieving phenomenal retirement or benefit results on these plans. And that's really what the goal is, to make it simple, to make it fun. Using our plans, industry average, there's about a 40% participation rate. That tells us that companies that we take over these plans, the people in the plans didn't understand them because of the confusion. Probably the people that sold them didn't understand. Most people don't even understand what they're selling, so they can't really help their companies much. But also, when you see low participation rates like that, we know the company's not getting the maximum value that they can be. So our bottom line goal is to have 95% participation rate, more than double what the industry average is. And we manage billions of dollars in this. We're part of a much larger company called Simplicity Group, and we do all their executive benefit programs for all their offices around the country. So it's a big chunk on a complex situation that we've simplified completely. We also administer these plans completely, so they don't have to administer them. And we're the most secure organization out there. We do what's called SOC 1, 2, and 3 for cyber protection and to protect the information of these executives that are putting money into these plans. So, you know, for us, it's fun. For the person that's stepping into this, yeah, it's a little scary sometimes, and we understand that. For people that have had a plan that's been put together improperly, wrong, with problems, then we know how to fix that and get them out of their messes and get them on the right track so that these things can be fun. We had a call just yesterday where a company already has about $20 million in the plan, and they're adding about $2.5 million a year. And one of the things they always cite is when they first met us 15 years ago, they were in free-for-all. Their plans were a mess. Their people were not trusting the company was going to give them benefits. All these bad things that can happen was going on. And since then, their plan has served a tremendous profit. They're about $6 million asset over liability.
Wow.
The owner can share that. They can use that for themselves. They can leave it in the plan, do whatever they want. But they're now in a world that they never thought they could experience by utilizing these plans.
You know, it's crazy. You addressed several major things. And one that really stands out to me is even the people that are selling these plans, a lot of the time, they don't truly understand them. They don't even know themselves what's really in there, what is really, you know, what's really possible. And it's too often that businesses do a poor job of explaining and showing what these benefits really are, what it all means. And like you said, you know, there's a lot of rules, regulations, and boundaries and things that are put in place, and that can really reduce the ability to retain and consume that information correctly. So just kind of briefly, what can companies do on the employee level to really simplify and help their team understand it? Because like you expressed, your guys' objective is 95% participation. So What can the average everyday company do to help really drive that and grow that participation in the benefits?
Well, the first thing they have to do is when you think about a plan, there's the folks that are sponsoring the plan that are in charge of putting the plan together at the plan level. And if they don't understand it, then absolutely they're scared to death. If I'm an HR director and I'm you know, putting together a plan for my C-suite folks and I do something wrong that's going to cost them money, I'm probably going to lose my job. So I'm scared to death. And so if I don't understand it, I'm absolutely not going to be able to transmit that properly down to the participants that are going to be eligible in the plan. So the first thing is to get those people comfortable, get them fully understanding in as quick as fashion as possible and a simple plan as possible to make sure that they understand exactly what the offer is. Once they're involved in the plan, then we take over from there with all the participants. We do a concierge total rewards program where we meet with every single participant. We show them what the value is, what it's going to mean to them on deferral. So if I'm making $1 million a year and I'm going to defer $200,000, I want to know what's going to happen to me, what that's going to mean net of taxes, what it's really going to cost me today. But also we educate them on what their value is going to look like in the future. And we show them real life values. We show them how to maximize things like Social Security, how to maximize their benefit payout by maybe not taking it in the same state where they're earning, like a California, maybe taking a distribution in another state, or even in a lot of cases with our plans, we have people taking distributions from other countries. And so when you do that and you go through and you show them not only how it affects them now, but also how it affects them during the transition and how it affects them for the rest of their lives. You know, people don't realize that the impact of taxes, for example, is just egregious. If I take a dollar and I double it every year for 20 years, I'll have $1 million. If I put a 40% tax bracket to it, I'll have a little more than $12,000. And people are alarmed at how strong those tax impacts are. When you pay taxes today, you're not just paying them today. If I've got another 20 years to to work before I retire, then I lose the compoundability of those dollars that would, that were going to be lost. So I lose that. And then I lose it for the 30 years that I'm going to be retired. So I lose a lot of money, generally tens of millions of dollars, for my own personal use. And then, of course, what I'm going to leave to my beneficiaries. So we go through and we explain that so that they can then share that information with their spouse. And, you know, from a married standpoint, and I know you're married, Ryan, you know, spouses, they see us get up, we go to work, they want to make sure they're okay. It's easy to explain, you're going to be fine now, I have a job, everything's good. But they also want to see what's going to happen in the future. Are we going to be able to retire? Are we going to have that day where we hang up the cleats and not have to guess what we have?
That's a really good point. That is a really, really good point. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's, that was going to be another big question. And this conversation is so jam-packed with value. It's unreal. So I recommend to our audience, please take notes. This is stuff that you don't want to be missing. So we will be right back on The Bottom Line. Up next, we'll discuss how to use benefits to recruit and retain top talent, and why smarter packages can give companies a real competitive edge. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Bottom Line. Love what you're watching? Don't miss a moment of The Bottom Line or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows, live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our full lineup of bilingual programming in both English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? Catch the podcast version of the show right on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and breaking news to lifestyle, culture, and everything in between, Now Media TV is streaming 24/7, ready whenever you are. We are back with Bob Nienaber, and this segment, we're talking about recruiting and retaining top talent through smarter benefits. There's a lot to learn and to know about benefits, a lot of strategies that many of us have no idea, but many businesses struggle to keep their best people because competitors offer more attractive packages. Bob is here to really help share some strategies to help companies of all sizes improve retention, attract top talent, and even boost morale without breaking the bank. So, Bob, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm excited to dive into this with you.
Thank you, Ryan.
You know, as I said, you know, it for a lot of businesses, it's hard to retain good employees. And smaller businesses often feel like they can't compete with the big competitors, you know, and the bigger corporations. You know, this segment, I really want to explore the practical but affordable approaches to designing benefits that matter to the real everyday workforce, right? So my first kind of big question for you is, why do benefits play such a big role in whether people choose to stay or leave a company?
Well, you know, the number one, it's a great question, because the number one reason why employees come to work for a company is generally what their pay structure is going to be. The number one reason why people leave companies is because of lack of benefits or lack of good benefits. And we know from all the HR organizations that serve the, especially the executive market space, we know that the cost of turnover for the lowest ranking HCs, highly compensated executives, about three times their total compensation to replace them. So if I'm paying somebody $200,000 a year, it's going to cost me about $600,000 to replace them, because I have to recruit them, I have to train them, I have to hope that the people that left didn't steal clients or steal relationships. If I get to the higher levels of the HCEs, like the C-suite folks, it's generally about five to six times their income. So if I'm paying a CEO and I lose that person, it's going to cost me around $6 million to pay them, to replace them, and to get somebody else in there. But also, more importantly, I'm going to lose the culture of the company. When I lose top people, I lose the direction that the company had. And we've seen over the decades, and I've been doing this for over 30 years myself, you know, when you lose top people, it's like a ball club. You know, the Yankees have been successful because they keep top people. They pay them well, they benefit them properly, and so people stick around, and so they have great results and great culture. But organizations that don't fall in line with that, that don't put together a good benefit program to recruit, retain, and reward people, they lose these people. They lose their good people. They lose their top culture. And so one of the key aspects of putting these plans in place is making sure you put a plan together that it really is going to solve that need of keeping people happy in their seats. And we see a lot of goofy plans that really don't work. We see a lot of phantom plans where companies believe that it's the cheapest way to go, when in fact, because they're not funding the plan today, it's by far the most expensive plan overall to implement. And so we put in real plans that have real cash or real equity with a company. And participants, when they get in there, they see a statement all the time. They can pull up daily, monthly, yearly, whatever they want to do. And they know these benefits are real. And so they're not going to ever have that discussion that I'm leaving because of lack of good benefits. Reason this whole totality exists with bad benefit plans out there is really misinformation in the marketplace. The misinformation from company standpoint is they think by implementing a plan, it's going to require more cash flow than they're already paying the executives, which is completely incorrect. In fact, if a plan is put together properly, it's going to greatly reduce the negative cash flow that exists around paying your executives. While at the same time, because of benefits, tax rules, Department of Labor regs, and other rules that are out there, the plan, when it's put together and funded properly, will serve as a profit center for the organization. So it'll actually make a profit. These profits can be shared back to the owners of the company. If it's a private company, it could be shared with shareholders, or it could be reincorporated into the plan to make the plans even more valuable, to do better matches or things like that as a plan matures. And so it really is a matter of sitting down, finding out what a company truly wants to achieve, what their goals are, what's their plan, what's going to excite the participants so that they do stay, so they are excited, so they do continue on with the company, and the company gets the most out of those values.
You know, one thing that I've got to bring up is that you reframed it from being, you know, a big expense to a value adder. And that's something that I feel like a lot of people just don't understand. And it's easy to look at it as, you know, an additional expense or risk for, you know, workflow, financial flow. And that's a big problem. But looking at it the correct way, being properly educated and understanding it, it really does add value and can become quite beneficial to the company overall. But, you know, with that being said, what kinds of benefits are employees looking for today that maybe weren't as important in the past?
Well, there's a lot of them that employees actually don't even realize that are out there sometimes. So when we introduce these plans, one, we're breaking down the understanding of tax and how income taxes really negatively affect participants' accounts. If I take a dollar and I double it every year, for example, it's going to be over $1 million in 20 years. If I put that same calculation into a 40% tax bracket, that participant's going to have a little more than $12,000. And when we go through and we introduce how to reduce or even eliminate a lot of taxes, like also people in 401ks that have, you know, values over $1 million, they don't realize that the Department of Labor regs have had a plan on the books since the 1970s that allow any corporate sponsored plans to have distributions taken out 100% tax-free at the end of the day for participants. So if I've got $3-5 million in a qualified 401k plan, I'm thinking I'm going to lose half of it to taxes. Well, that doesn't have to be the case. There's a process that you can go through utilizing the Department of Labor regs, completely legal. We don't use any white papers with our firm. That's why we've never had any lawsuits, loss audits. We've never even had a customer or participant complaint in all the years that we've done this, and we manage billions of dollars in assets. And so at the end of the day, it really becomes educational more than anything.
That is interesting. That's very interesting. And that it's vital. It's very, very vital, because there are differences, there are changes, and there are ways to get around stuff that we automatically think is just required, right? The dealing with the taxes, being able to really understand that is, my goodness, that's something I don't even truly understand. So I'm learning here. I mean, like I said before in other segments, other guests, this is one of the things even I should be taking notes on. But how can, you know, smaller businesses create benefit packages that still compete with those big corporations? Because even though, you know, they vary in size, there's got to be some way to make that benefit package still look really appealing.
Yeah, no, and that's a perfect question, because most companies think I've got to be a public company to participate in true executive benefit programs. I've got to be, you know, doing a couple billion dollars a year in revenue and all these types of things. And that's really not the case, because, I could be a $10 million company and I could have one or two people that are making tons of money for me, for my organization. And I 100% can participate in these plans just by putting one or two people in. And the ERISA rules that exist on things like 401ks don't exist in non-qualified plans. So really, I have a white paper to design that plan and to discriminate who I'm going to put into the plan. I don't have to put everybody into the plan. If I have a 401k that's not meeting top hat requirements and I'm forced to do a safe harbor plan, which can cost the company, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars, I can eliminate that hassle by setting up these plans. And again, I could be a $10 million company or I could be a $20 billion company. Really doesn't matter. It just comes down to what your goals are. And I always tell companies that are kind of new to this, because we graduate to this. We start off with 401ks. We start off with the smaller benefit plans that are available and might work. But when you get people that are earning values that are much higher than what we can do in the qualified plan because of the restrictive nature of qualified plans, then we need to get into the non-qualified world. We need to understand what's going on. And our process is so simple that we guarantee when somebody gets on the phone with us after the first hour, they'll be experts. They'll understand exactly you know, what they're trying to do, what the results are going to be, what the results are going to be if they do nothing, what the results are going to be if they implement a plan, and what the cash flows are going to be. Once they have this information, now they're powerful. And they're saving the company money, they're building a profit center for the company, and they're, more importantly, they're retaining the top people that they're after. They're able to recruit and compete against the large companies that are out there to get the best people so they can grow the company to the next level. And so all of these are absolutely 100% imperative that they take the time and just do a quick session, learn about this stuff so that they can, you know, make some money on it and get the company going in the right direction from a benefit standpoint.
There's a lot of value in that. And like you said, you know, it doesn't have to be because the company's so big, you just can't compete with them. Like that's huge. And to be able to really understand that, I mean, that adds a lot of value to a lot of businesses. You know, Bob, this has been an incredibly insightful conversation. Where can the people that are watching our audience, where can they find you? Where can they follow your work and get in contact with you?
Well, as you mentioned in the open piece, I serve over 100 boards with information on these things on a regular basis. So I always give all the senior executives and HR directors my direct number because I'm on the road. I fly around the U.S. and internationally. So my direct number, if you ever want to just catch up with me and have a quick conversation, get on a schedule for a detailed conversation, is 916-838-0866. If you're looking for information, you can go to our website, benefitrfp.com, and there's a litany of library pieces, of educational, informational cartoons, and podcasts. There's all kinds of stuff that's available on the website itself. What I'd say, if you don't have a plan and you're scared, you're afraid to make those steps, we'll ease you through that so that it'll make more sense and be more fun for you. Because, again, it's benefits. It's cash. It should be fun. There's nothing that should be bad from this conversation. If you have an existing plan and you've never had it audited, tax laws have changed that have drastically given more and more advantages on having these plans. And these plans and products have been around for 100 years, so they're nothing new.
Yeah, it shouldn't be anything to be too afraid of. And I'm really glad you brought that up. And Bob, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your expertise, from understanding the complexities of benefits to leveraging them as a tool to attract and retain talent. You've given our viewers actionable strategies that can actually make a real difference in their business. For everyone watching, remember, benefits aren't just a checkbox. They're a way to build trust, loyalty, and a stronger workplace culture. Whether you lead a small team or a large organization, clarity and strategy and benefits can transform how your people feel and perform. Again, I'm Ryan Herpin, and we will see you next time on The Bottom Line. Remember, success isn't given, it's earned.
Thank you, Ryan.